have a presentation by Keka Chopravarti. She became a good friend of mine through our studies of Vedic hymns in ITI. And she's a physicist, yes? She has an MA in physics. And she approached her, so to say, search for the truth through the physics. And then she found out that physics does not have those answers, and she found Sri Aurobindo and her answers. So she approaches physics through Sri Aurobindo and finds certain perspectives which we are interested in. And today she will present her presentation on this particular topic. And maybe she will say a few words about herself, where you are from, what you did, and where you were involved. She lived in the US for many years. And she's a friend of Devashish. Lived in Los Angeles, yes? So, you can tell a few words about yourself before we start.
Thank you. It's really, I didn't think of it. Vladimir encouraged me and said that you should do it. So, thank you for that. And wanted to correct one statement that Vladimir made. I do not have a master's degree in physics.
Oh, sorry.
I only have a master's degree in physics. And, but then I did another bachelor's in computer science and master's in computer science. So, I sort of shifted to engineering from mainstream physics due to several guidance at that time. I don't know whether it was a mistake or whatever. But I think physics was something that I was interested in, anything that I came across before I came across Shrivindra. So, and there was this sudden hope that I would find when string theory came out, I thought this is it. And then no, that's not it. So it went on like that, and then I was following my profession in computer science and business and all these things. All these things like really happened in like a dream world. I don't know whether I really participated in any of these things. I was working for 12 years in the US, mostly Los Angeles, for AT&T. And my seeking was in the background, and I didn't believe in God till 2004. It's not that I had any anger or any kind of hatred, I just couldn't describe it for myself. So, and after that, it was an accident that I came across Sri Aurobindo's writings and Mother's writings. And then everything became like one single thread. So, since I had a little bit seeking through physics at some point of time, so it was a natural phenomenon that they got connected with Sri Aurobindo's clarity of perception. So that's what we are. Okay, so I try to make my approach as not really making my own statement, but really bring about the facts of experimental results and physical laws in physics. And so I will start with the wave and particle duality of light. So for that, I need to explain a little bit on the whiteboard. After that, we will go to the slide. So first, you all are familiar with waves, say waves in the ocean, tides. So you see, it is like some height of water, and then it is followed by some kind of dip in the water, right? So this is a typical pattern of wave. Now, how light is a weight, because for water is easy to even visualize, like it's visible, but somewhere the water is more in quantity, and then it's like a dip. So basically it's the higher quantity here. So in terms of light, it is more light here, which means it's brighter. And it is less light or no light, that means it's dark. So that's the typical wave pattern of light. So bright, dark, bright, dark. Now that's the shape of the wave. But then it propagates. Then again we go back to how the ocean waves propagate. As if like already there is a wave along here which wants to make its way. So it pushes. So like the folds are pushed by as if some current. So that's how the it propagates. Now it is shown as, we can see it like, since it is happening in all directions, so the line of propagation is like a curvature. It is ultimately a part of a circle. So what we are getting at now is the wave shape is, individual wave is like this, and the propagation is through circles. It's like this pushing is in all directions. So that's the ocean waves. Now this curvature propagation concept remains valid for all the waves. So then light not necessarily to propagate in all directions, it has a direction and it goes forward and all that. But if we don't obstruct, it will actually, if there is a ball, if there is no obstruction, it goes in all directions. So basically, the way we can sort of narrow down its field of propagation is by putting some obstruction. So now, this is the wave phenomenon of light. There are certain properties by which the wave properties have been proved of light. And one of them is interference. So what is interference? This, when it is going like this, they don't have to be necessarily very far from each other, they can be really close to each other. So when they're very close to each other, there is a probability that it will interact. Two lines of waves can interact. Now, how will they interact? So side by side, and this is going like this, this is going like this. Because here again, this can go in all directions. Here again, because the source is not exactly at the point, it is like this. So, and then, so this is the source, so then, so on, right? So here, they interact. So now, you can see, it can interact in various ways, because of this shape, so two shapes can interact by exact superimposition. Exact superposition can have like two waves exactly falling on each other, where these two brightness fall at the same point. So it is like twice as much bright. Similarly, the dark point can be twice as much dark. So this is basically the superposition of two waves can be drawn like this. Right? Now, there could be exactly opposite. So here we say they are in phase, and the opposite phase is when it overlaps like this. So this and this cancels it here, and this and this cancels it here. So basically, extreme dark, extreme bright is something that we'll be interested in. So these two points are the things that can create bands. So basically, when it falls on the screen, it creates bands. Say, this is bright, this is dark, this is bright, this is dark, and so on. Because this kind of superposition is happening at each point on the screen. So that's the wave phenomenon. Now we come to how this will be explained with particle phenomenon. Particle, so we are interested in this, right? This maxima is, these are typically called maxima and minima. So here, in particle concept, it's thought of as more number of photons, as less number of photons.
Can you speak a little louder?
Sure. Did you hear? The more number of photons and less number of photons. Maxima is more number of photons. Minima is less number of photons. So, or even no photon at all. So basically,
photons
are particles. I'm saying from the wave to the particle description of light, we transfer this kind of more light and less light pattern in this wave pattern into more photons and less photons. So it's like a fold where more photons is exactly followed by less photons. So it is like in creating a wave phenomenon out of particles.
But we do not know what photons are.
This is not really like chair and table. And that's true. But, laws go on and they succeeded in many things. So then, this is the experiment. Actually, you may wonder why I'm really talking about like so core, hardcore experiments and all that. But I feel I wanted to give a background. This experiment is something where physicists almost forever got into some kind of disagreement, which is still unresolved. And this experiment is one of the key points of this kind of conclusions. So this was originally done by Young, that's why it's called Young's double slit experiment. He did it, photon was totally out of the question. So he did it to actually prove the wave theory of light. That to show that it does interfere, so as a result it is a wave. But then later on, when the quantum theory came out, which is photoelectric effect by Einstein, this experiment was again looked at. So this experiment is actually, I actually did it in my physics lab. This small, very small piece of metal, and it has like one slit, and inside there is a little wire kind of thing. So basically it is creating two slits. Now, those two slips are shown here, this and this. This shows like as if this is very thick, but it's not. It's very, very thin. So this is one slit. This is two slits. Now, when there is a light source, say like just a bulb, lighting it with the bulb, and so the light is falling on this metal, and it is as if like two secondary sources are created, because though it is actually one source, but two secondary sources are created because there is an obstruction in between.
Two waves.
Right, two sources, meaning two potential sources, because from here it doesn't see the bulb. It sees two points of light, which are basically sources, which are why it is called secondary, because it is not the original. So original is one, the secondary are two. Now then, it has these waves. So similarly, as we describe here, they will interact, especially because they are very close by, and they are coming from the same source. So they have the exact coherence of this light waves or photon particles, which is what we call it, because they are actually produced at one point of source. They are passed through two points of sources. Now, when they interact, they create this bright, as I showed on the screen. They create bright and orange or red ones are bright, and the white ones are dark. Or vice versa, doesn't matter. So these spots are created, these bands are created, and they're very pretty, very bright. Okay. Now, also I want to mention, if there are two different light sources going through two single slits, what really happens is that light gets diffracted. There is another phenomenon called diffraction, which bends through the slit, and some go straight, some kind of manage to bend. So that's why, again, this kind of, though it is a point, a slit, very narrow way out, but still it manages to spread. It doesn't really go only this. It also fills up V space with light. How it happens? By diffraction, like bending. Now, two different light source and two different single slit create two diffraction pattern. Diffraction pattern also is one thing to mention, because they can also interact. These two lines, this is also interact, right? But somehow these are much less attractive and much less, I mean, not as short bands as this produces. So basically there is a differentiation just by looking at the screen, that what these two light sources can produce through two different single slits versus one light source can produce through a double slit like this. So here, actually, at the more towards the edge of the screen, you will see diffraction pattern, even in this case, which are not as bright, or not as sharp, in other words. But interference patterns take place exactly in the middle of the screen, and they are very bright.
So basically, what you say, this black and bright kind of patterns, they are reflecting the wave of light and dark, or something like this, because the wave is resembling.
Yeah, I mean, not reflecting, they're interfering.
Yeah.
So at some points, it's creating, say, when they sort of end up at the screen point, say, on light from all directions came. This slit came, from this slit came, and at this point, from this slit came like this, and this slit came like this, right? So, this meeting point can be a maximum, can be a minimum.
So they split, maximum and minimum.
No, I'm saying the pattern is looking like a split pattern. That's why you see bands. Bands you can see only if there is an alternative, bright and dark. I mean, it's not color. There is no prism. So it is just white light. Okay. Okay. Now, am I clear so far?
It's a puzzle. Why it is this pattern there, white and dark, in such a form? When you remove from the source, it becomes bigger, becomes smaller.
Remove from the source? Yeah. If you move the source.
Yes.
Actually,
or it stays the same.
I think it will stay the same, but it will have. I mean, it may not even manage to have interference pattern. At some point, it will disappear. Mm-hmm. So.
I have a question to the other design. You say that the number of photons is growing until a certain point and then it comes to zero. How can it be below zero? The number of photons cannot be less than zero. Oh, if you show it like that, it says that some other force has to be there where it's less than zero.
No, it's not less than zero. This is not zero line.
Okay.
This is for the wave shape. I need to draw it like this. The shape is actually wave. I'm saying this shape is imitated by photon in such manner that this is more photon and this is less photon. It is not really zero. This is not a zero line. So there's no negative, of course.
Right.
So, any more questions? Because after this, I will really get into this quantum theory part. This is just to explain.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a question or an awareness. I think when we represent waves in a sinus curve or something, that this is just a two-dimensional representation of a three or more-dimensional thing.
Yeah.
Waves are much more complex. The wave in the ocean or the wave of light, this is only a representation in two dimensions.
Yeah, the answer to that question is that it is not, by this shape, we are not really presenting any material object. We are presenting the action or propagation of that thing, whatever, whether it's photon or wave, whichever way, it's like this is a pattern, in other words. It's like a pattern. It's not a shape of an object. So, because when we say wave, it is no longer a matter. No longer matter. It's not a material thing. Only in photon, when we represent this wave shape in terms of photon, then we say quantity of photon, not shape of any particular object. Now, but when you are really talking about wave, it's much subtler than a material object. It's like, it's something we just cannot really describe other than just these things, like propagation and movement, action. I mean, how do you define energy before the particle theory came? So these are the, like, it is like an abstraction of its action. Okay? A map on the board of how it operates. So, okay, let me then get into the next part of it. So basically, this part is very simple that, you know, now let's totally forget about the wave and we now concentrate on exactly at the photon, because that's what we are going to go through our presentation. So, say some photons are going like this, some photons are going like this, and photons are going like that, and so on. So each outlet is letting stream of photons to go and spread. Same thing with this slit. Stream of photons are going through that slit. And since they're going like this, so they interact. So how they will interact, that will, like, if this could interact like this, or this could interact like this here, or no interaction here, for example, and so on. So then this much, okay, so basically another thing to remember is this pattern, once it is produced on the screen, it is fixed. It doesn't change. So that means it is a very consistent behavior. It's not like at one point of time, this second, it is making more photons are going at the, hitting this screen at this point and less photon here. And then next moment it is happening like differently at random. It doesn't happen like that. The pattern on the screen remains fixed. So that comes with the probability distribution of photons. Like the distribution of photons, not yet probability distribution. The distribution of photons are consistent, it doesn't change with time. Now, when we are thinking how it is not changing, then it is like a pattern of photon's behavior, that if one photon goes like this, then another photon will go like this. If one photon comes like this, then another photon will come like this. This kind of relationship is necessary to create this pattern as a fixed pattern which does not change with time. So then we came to the point that the pattern is maintained by two coherent secondary light sources. The coherence of these sources can fix a pattern or distribution if you think in terms of photons. Now, next thing is there is no negative. Photons are either non-existent or existent. Mm-hmm. Most can be. So here we see a side-by-side description of the fringe. Fringes are nothing but bands and the role of the slits. It says the interference bands comes from the variations of intensity level. A square is equal to square of the amplitude, which is this, and it's also called intensity, of the resultant wave at each point on the screen. Resultant, why it is saying? Because it is meeting on the screen at each point some kind of combination of two waves. In no point is getting a wave only from or light from only from one slit. Every point on the screen is getting light from both the slits.
What is the cause of the variation of intensity?
That's what, that because they interfere, so it's the way it is interfering, it could be this, so which makes it a bigger wave because it's more brighter and it is darker, and it could be like this.
So it's not a pulsation from the source, it's the interference.
Yeah.
Which causes the pulsation.
Right. So it is saying resultant
wave. Pulsation means the increase and decrease in intensity.
Exactly. So variation of the resultant wave. That's what we are calling. So when we are using the term resultant wave, it is after the superposition of the waves.
And then not more of just when the appearance, you bring up two, they can either enlarge in itself or cancel itself, but you would have, you can have like a phase interference.
Oh, more experiment, like overlapping two sets.
Yeah, so more options of interference.
Yes,
right?
Yes, of course. So this is like, we keep it simple, but you will see how complex it goes. I mean, just from this simple thing. So we are saying the interference comes, and in quantum theory we are saying the interference comes from the variations in the probability P of a photon striking different points on the screen. So basically,
you control. This, you want this?
So the probability, see here, as if it's showing that it is just going, but in when it comes to the photon, it has probability of going in different directions, particularly always hitting at this screen, I mean at this point of the screen, taking this route, and here the probability of photons coming from this, taking this route, this resulting probability. See, this is not a sum of probabilities. It's a resultant combination of probabilities, which is quite different from two probabilities summed up. Right? So, the probability of this bright point, which is superposition of say two maxima points of these two routes, is what we are referring here of a photon, in the probability of a photon striking different points on the screen. So probability P of a photon striking different points on the screen includes the probability of this screen taking this route, and this slit taking this route, and a combined phenomenon of taking this slit and taking this route. So this is like, just like resultant wave, it is like resultant probability. The next one is,
it's kind of a random phenomenon of turning positive and negative. It's like you throw a coin or something.
Yeah.
So
yes,
of course. You remember we had this presentation at Princeton University? Random phenomena when you throw 100 coins up and they will fall 50-50. There is something about it that you cannot really deal with. Why it is 50-50, nobody knows. So it will be close to the center. It won't be like, you know, all four on one side, 80-20. So what is that 50-50 thing? It's a wave of somewhere there. The balance of the movement of force. It's something which is...
It's quite interesting, this the phenomenon you were talking about, that 50-50. See, in some cases we know it is 30-70. Why? Because they say there is an disturbance on the way, right? Which is already, we are probabilistically, we are already foreseeing that it is going to be distributed not 50-50 but by this. So that means no disturbance means 50-50. So maybe it is not like statistics is driving them, rather the nature's phenomenon drove our statistics. Like, that's how we got these statistics. Where did it come from? We saw it in nature. So, now how do we coordinate? It is a mathematical correlation. This n is the number of photons, and a square or amplitude or intensity. Intensity is the square of amplitude, actually. So, we say P, probability is proportional to the intensity. Remind you that probability is again the combination of two probabilities, and intensity is the intensity of the resultant wave. So we are saying if the probabilities are taken independently, like for example the diffraction pattern we said, the probabilities are summed up. like they are not related, they are independent. So the probability will be typically summation of two probabilities. Then it would become the diffraction pattern of two single slits, which is A1 square plus A2 square. But look at this. There is a 2A1 A2 cos phi. That is creating this interference pattern.
Do you see it? What is cos phi?
Cos phi.
Just the fact that where does it come from?
It's the basically that phase. See, this is also described in terms of angle. When it superimposes exactly on top of each other, they're in phase. Remember, at the very beginning I mentioned it. And then when they're totally opposite, they're out of phase. And that is considered as pi equal to 180 degrees. So, but there are many intermediate possibilities, right? We are drawing the maxima and minima. There are many intermediates. So pi is something where if it is 180 degree, cos 0 is 1, right? And cos 180 is minus 1. No? I forgot actually.
But with this pattern where the light and dark areas, patterns, yes? They are brighter to the center and less brighter to the periphery, or they are staying as
bands?
Bands, bright bands.
But then yes. The HDM soft diffraction.
Yeah.
Diffraction.
But not like fading from
no,
the center.
No. That's why it is exactly sharp bands. It is not a one light which is intensity wise just varying. It's each alternate points are having sharp alternative intensities. What I mentioned in the beginning is that the diffraction pattern still could be seen at the edge of the screen. Like more further you go, because this coherence cannot really take these bright bands too far. It is more in the middle range of the screen. So, diffraction patterns are also patterns of this kind of in-phase and out-of-phase. But they are not sharp. Why? Because it is not as consistently contained. That's why, 1 second you see this, the next second you don't really see the opposite. If you see the opposite, you don't even see any band. But it is slightly shifted or slightly changed. So that's why the edges are blurred. Because they are changing with time. So interference pattern does not change because it does, I mean, it's sharp because it does not change with time. It is fixed. So this is the phi, the angle. I mean, actually, more precisely, I should say that phi somehow coordinates the superposition of these waves. So. This, if it is opposite, then it is 180 degree, and if it is positive, and then see if A1 equal to A2, if both have both slits have exact same intensity, so then 2A1 A2 cos phi. So cos phi varies from 0 to 1 to minus 1. Sorry, cos 0 is 1. Cos 90 is 0 and cos 180 is minus 1. So basically A1 square plus A2 square, it could be plus A1 A2, 2A1 A2, and it could be 0 or it could be minus 2A1 A2, right? And if A1 equal to A2 is just A1 square. So all together is like A1 square plus A1 square plus 2A1 square, which is 4A1 square. A square, in other words. Right? So 4A square and it could be even down to 0, because cos phi would be minus 1, so it is 2a1 2, which is minus a 2a square, so a square plus a square minus 2a square, which is 0. Okay. So that's how we can mathematically reproduce this maximum. So this is where this 2a1 into cos phi, which is missing if we sum up two probabilities and not take the resultant probability. Now, strange things are observed. The interference pattern is maintained with a low power beam shooting one photon. Now, so far, we were comfortable with the fact that many photons, like stream of photons, they are somehow managing to maintain this distribution. Now, the experiment was, somebody had some intuition. Experiment was repeated with low, so low that it will shoot one photon at a time. So it is no longer going to be a chunk of photons into which the distribution is maintained. So, and also, if anybody has any doubt, which Mr. Feynman did, so he repeated the experiment with electron, where he can actually control the shooting by electron gun, and the same result was produced. So, what are the possible? Okay, now with the low power beam or shooting one electron at a time, whichever the way is, it is still maintaining the bands. How? The very beginning, when the experiment started, you see, okay, here one dot of light, there is no dot some point, and so on. With time, even days, the same pattern was produced. After days. So that means, it is not just, it so happened, this nature's phenomenon that, you know, that lots of photons in a chunk somewhere in the group, they maintain a distribution pattern. Not just that, it is more than that. So it is not just I'm already going ahead, which will come later. So it is not a property of a group. It is not just a property of a group. It is property of each individual person. So that's where we are going to, but the experiment will show. So basically, then after a few days, when the same pattern was observed by shooting one from the original source, see, the original source is here, not these two slits, right? Here, in the original source, when one particle was shot at one time. Now, then what are the possibilities? Then photons split and become two and go through both the slits? Because otherwise, how does the second photon know that the first photon took this slit? So I take this slit, so we'll meet there. So they couldn't explain. So first possibility comes like this. Then the answer is no, because it has been proved by a detector that emits a signal when struck by a photon. It is found that those signals have the same intensity. Also, two detectors next to two slits never simultaneously record the passing of a photon. So it actually discarded the possibility that one photon actually split between into two and took two different slits at the same point in time. Second possibility comes, some photons pass through one slit and some through the other, which is of course the normal possibility. But then, Taylor's experiment with one slit open at a time created only two adjacent overlapping single slit diffraction patterns. So that means we are if we keep one slit open and one slit closed, and do the same experiment, whether it's low beam or high beam, one photon or several photons at a time, we see two overlapping or two diffraction patterns, which I just mentioned at the very beginning. Now, this experiment, how is it different from keeping two slits open but shooting only one photon at a time? It's like something spooky, right? I mean, if one photon is going and they're not splitting, so one photon will take one slit. So this slit is now not used anyway. So next time we open this slit and let the photon pass. But no, the pattern is different. Only if we even shoot one photon at a time, but keep both the slits open, then only this pattern is produced.
So if, if you have only one slit open, then the photons can only find that slit.
Yeah.
But there will still be a diffraction pattern,
yeah,
as a result of multiple photons going through the slit.
Multiple photons, but over time. The pattern doesn't immediately appear. It actually appears after days, when it is one photon at a time.
But if you have two slits open, then some photons will find one and some will find the other.
Yeah.
And the diffraction pattern will be more immediate.
I mean, no. It will have interference pattern, which is different from the diffraction pattern.
The interference pattern.
Yeah. It is sharper because it doesn't change its pattern.
So then what's the difference?
That's what.
Is like, there any difference?
There is some difference. So we will get to that.
But the difference is just the result of having
a... Also the result of what we did in the environment.
Exactly. That's the main difference.
That's the main difference, and the difference is in the result on the screen.
Yeah, but that result is the result of the difference in the environment.
Exactly. So they must have some relationship.
The second pattern is affected by the first. What is the sun, what we call it, the intention is given for the second, when the first photon has already found its point.
Uh-huh. And the second photon doesn't know, right?
No, it doesn't know, but if the first has already found its point,
uh-huh,
then the second maybe
could go either way.
Could be attractive.
How is it attractive?
By then maybe there is a...
There is an attractive force here.
There is intention there.
That's what we are getting at. See, science does not talk about any kind of intention or any kind of attractive force between the photons. It's just photons, that's it. Stream of force.
Something on screen.
Yeah, that's what we are getting at. So, the next is, then both slits were kept open and a detector was placed to detect behind one of the slits, just to see when photon, because now it is one photon at a time, right? So when one photon strikes which slit. Incidental statistical data, then at least you can look back and come up with a formula, right? But no. The moment we keep a detector behind one of the slits, interference pattern is again broken.
So
interference pattern is again broken. Meaning we have no way to know. Okay. So, this is something I have written. So, uncertainty of the path of the photon is accompanied by the coherence of two light sources? Question. We don't know. The moment it is made certain, it behaves the same as the incoherent or independent sources would behave. So this is the observation. Okay. Now this famous statement, ninth theorem, God does not play dice. Okay. Why it came? Because Niels Bohr, Copenhagen, interpretation said that the photons don't know in advance which slit or which route it would take before it actually hits that point. So ultimately it has inherent assumption or observation or perception that it is not a property of a group which is somehow statistically managed to present this phenomenon or pattern. It is actually ingrained in each photon, this pattern, that some kind of intelligence that is there. So, but then Einstein never accepted it actually. In his opinion, if photons actually exist, their motion should be determined. That's what he says. Then he tried to review this whole thing by polarization, because that's what his really thing was, polarization light and all that. This mouse. Actually, that somehow the touchpad I think is deactivated. So, photon spin. Yeah. So basically, light polarization is something like when light photons can spin parallel and antiparallel two directions, and polarization meaning when the photon took a particular orientation. Now, a calcite crystal can actually make the spin orientation in a particular direction. So basically that phenomenon is called polarization. This is very oversimplified description. I don't want to get into the details. It's really complex, polarization. Now, that is with wave it's okay, because the spin is of course the particle phenomenon, but in the wave it is like okay, it was like even uniform and unpolarized, and then through the crystal it became polarized, meaning it has a certain orientation of behavior. So, but quantum theory deals with it as if that there is an intrinsic angular momentum, which is basically the spin. There are pairs of photons. One has antiparallel, one has parallel, and so on. I mean, rather parallel and antiparallel. So this sum, this coexistence of these two, is there in an unpolarized light. And when it goes to crystal, there are two beams that are produced by separating these two types. So here it's saying, so basically Einstein says that suppose a stationary particle emits two photons. Back to back in opposite directions. For the conservation of angular momentum, the photons will spin in opposite directions so that their sum be zero. So if the spin of one is measured, the spin of the other will be known too. Right? The saying, however, Copenhagen interpretation asserts that each photon has an equal probability of being in the parallel or antiparallel spin orientation. Light is unpolarized if we cannot determine its polarization. But that does not mean that unpolarized light have an equal mixture of parallel spin and antiparallel spin. Being unpolarized is a property of each photon in a beam of unpolarized light. So the property is not aggregation. It is much subtler than that, much more intrinsic than that. Right? So, I mean, like a crude example, you can say, okay, when you are boiling rice, you know, saucepan, I mean, they take different places. Somehow, say, it so happens with property that the left side always turns gray and the right side remains white. I'm just giving a very rough example. But then, when actually the rice is boiling, it has equal probability to go either left part or the right part. It so happens that the pattern somehow at the end is like one side is gray and the other side is white. But it's not like the rice had an aggregation of two gray and white kind of thing. It so happens at the end. So it is like each rice has an equal probability of going the left part of the saucepan, and each rice has equal probability of going the right part of the saucepan. So this equal probability is inherent in each rice. It is not that it was predetermined that this rice will always go to the left and this rice will always go to the right, and the whole saucepan is made of such pairs which is predetermined in its action like that. It is not.
So why does it happen?
This just happens.
I think the one question is, why does Einstein want to believe that the polarization phenomena must be there? And why does Bohr want to believe that it must not be there?
Well, some people are here and some people don't care to present, I mean, attend this kind of
thing. Do you know the answer to that question?
I think, I mean, it's again my opinion. I won't say that I know, but my opinion is that Bohr saw one layer deeper. Bohr could penetrate, his vision penetrated one layer deeper. That's
so after all of this time, do you believe that the indeterminacy has been substantiated by experiments?
Indeterminate meaning undetermined. Yes. Yes. I mean, so far the experiment has still validated this kind of unpolarized is a property of each photon, and not
so,
two
yeah.
differently polarized photons are always present.
So Einstein's opinion was influenced by a certain bias.
Yes.
That he had towards regularity and plan.
Exactly.
And
absolutely. Yes. I mean, that's my absolutely is again. I.
But I think that's generally
accepted. So. So it's the same thing continues. Therefore, when passing through a calcite crystal, each photon has a 50% chance of emerging in one or the other polarized beams, such as we do not know through which slit a photon passes in Young's experiment. Likewise, we cannot tell whether a particular photon was emitted with its spin in one orientation or another. All we can say is that each photon has a 50% chance of being polarized in one orientation or the other. When the spin of one of the photons is actually measured, it immediately determines the spin orientation of both photons. Now that is the continuation of Copenhagen and Niels Bohr's interpretation.
So basically, they cannot spin in the same direction all the time. They have to spin in different.
Well, this have to or they cannot can also be replaced that they would not and they would. I mean, it depends on how you want to see it. So, but yes, they inevitably or, I mean, you know, almost feels like a compulsion that they will have to abide by the laws.
So to the radio spin exactly in balance with the thing. Not to be, you see, they spin in one direction all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They will create this balance somewhere else.
Yeah.
So they will be spinning into another direction.
Yeah, and then the whole world will be broken. I mean, like, if you start breaking rules like that, then you are gone. You won't exist anymore. So, this is the laws that are upholding sort of all the material existence.
That's why the wave is not going into the infinity, because it has to balance it.
Yeah. Well, well, I was thinking of saying something else. I don't know, totally. I forgot something I was thinking of. Yeah. Anyway, so basically, but what if the two photons had traveled some distance from one another when the measurement was made? So Copenhagen interpretation is saying when one measurement is made. Oh yeah, I was thinking of saying that this kind of, whether it is polarization or creating maximum, going through upper slit or lower slit, whichever the property, it is the property of the combination of that particle and the time, that moment. It is not aggregation of two, you know, opposite properties always existent at all points of time. That's the real difference, I mean, between these two observations. So anyway, but what if two, okay, somebody is arguing, I mean, Einstein himself has argued that, okay, if one measurement is made and the other is determined, what if the two photons had traveled and after that the measurement was made? How does the second photon come to know that a measurement has been made so that it has to spin according to that? As if it has to adjust. This issue became known as locality paradox. It's a very, I think you already know. So then starting to investigate how this can be described, saying the instantaneous communication, meaning one photon has already gone far, it doesn't know, cannot communicate with this one, because if they have to communicate like that, they have to travel faster than that, which violates relativity, so we cannot take that, as it had to travel faster than okay. Then there was a further, actually this was a some kind of later sort of observation, investigation, that what if there were two observers, not even one observer, where observer sees this, oh okay, I know then the other one is this, not like that, two independent observers are observing two different photons, such an abstract thought anyway, and what if afterwards when the observers met, they are changing their modes. Okay, this was spinning like this, and that observer is saying it is spinning like this.
So stop right there.
Then,
what, do they make similar predictions when they do that?
I mean, these are abstract thoughts. Nobody could ever do that. How can you do that? I mean, how can you consciously? I mean, like two photons are not like two chairs. That okay, one is going like this, one is going like that. I mean, you couldn't do it.
But there must be an effort to measure different people measuring different.
Two photons belonging to the same pair.
Well,
no, it's not possible because it's just that
two fields.
Yeah, but then that is the group of photons where the pattern is linking. You cannot say that two different observers are measuring two different photons that belong to the same twin. That was not, it is an abstract.
So they are always in twins? The photons are always in twins?
It is not that photons are in twins. For presenting this pattern or behavior, it has to be, the mind thinks that there was a twin.
And if it was not, and it formed according to the observation?
Possibility. Well, that is sort of a little difficult. don't take Copenhagen interpretation like that, as exactly what they say. Mm-hmm. But it didn't really say that. Where it's actually, some people even go this far, that it is mind which created spheres, actually. I mean, actually it is in that route, what you just suggested, it is in that route. Anyway, so what if two observers, measure two different photos, and when they were exchanging notes, and we first thought this was the first observer and then that was the second observer, but then when they were exchanging their time of their record, then it was found out the second observer actually measured before the first observer. So, as if like something has already been determined, but I'm thinking that a measurement actually measured that. So that's sort of confusion. Another is, what if they never met? So, is Copenhagen interpretation depending on the single observer notion? So, because you cannot really explain even Copenhagen interpretation if you don't take the single observer phenomenon. And that means that it has this intrinsic.
It's a paradox.
Yes, sir?
It's ultimately a paradox.
Of course. But I'm saying this is an inherent assumption. This abstract thought presents that Copenhagen interpretation is assuming there will be a single observer of this, who is observing a pattern. See, the thing is, when you are dividing the observation, dividing into a pattern of nature, that just is abstract. Because what we see is pattern, which is a combination of behavior. But if we divide it that far, that we break the pattern into observers. No, that doesn't
work. That's just
work.
A proof that mind is not able to know with certainty.
Right.
The behavior
exactly.
Of nature.
Absolutely. So many experiments of the kind suggested by Einstein have been carried out ever since. Their setup ruled out the possibility of any link between the production of the photons and the measurements made upon them, or that the detectors could have affected the findings. After so many years, that spooky Copenhagen interpretation still could not be valid. Okay, so let's, I think, settle down, I mean, because this is again going into a totally different part. Any question? Any disparity? Okay. This is another crazy thing.
Before launching into the next.
Becoming that by that particular part of that particular context, something else. And that context itself is demanding certain balance of things. As if there is something like ether, if you like, something in which all that has to be determined in its own way. And you can't overlook or do something into it. Of course, you can make good work. Split or whatever, but that is a great violation. So we are not talking about violations. There is something which is unholding the thing and does not permit it to be extremely violated.
But even the atom bomb is a violation of one kind, but this is an area where even that didn't go. Like no force, because this is an uncertainty or not being able to determine. there's something that it hit is hitting this party. That's why I was so, you know, particular about showing the experiment to start with. This experiment and its interpretation shows that there is a point when you hit some kind of singularity which cannot be called the divine period. Even if it is nature, not, I mean, no, just in nature itself, that it is the ultimate safeguard, I would say.
I think what you're saying is that there must be an independent reality, which is independent in the sense that it's independent of mind's interpretation. So then the question is, which is the main question of philosophy in the 20th century, is can that reality be known by another level of consciousness? Because the interpreting pattern-oriented intelligence can only know that it must be there, but it doesn't know what it is.
Or why it is there.
So when Heidegger says, what is being? And he proves time and time again that it's not knowable by logical processes. The question is simply that. What is being? And not how do we measure the patterns that we observe. And this is where science and philosophy part ways.
Yeah, exactly. Like division and overall, no, like overview kind of thing.
And we're strongly compelled by the idea that the patterns that we observe are somehow the reality.
Yeah.
And yet, ultimately, it's not the case.
Right. And also, it is funny in a way, I feel that, you know, it clearly shows that mind has its own limited instrumentality of, I mean, mind is this kind of experimental mind, like I'm talking about the physical mind that goes into this kind of experiments, is that unless we can divide and aggregate, I mean, unless we describe each property by dividing further and then aggregate further, then only I feel that I know it.
As if I know.
But you don't.
As if I know. Yeah.
But
I mean, like, yeah. Like this is an assumption.
What you know is the pattern.
Yeah.
That you have observed or created. Or
right. And not only that, the way it thinks it knows is that by dividing and then aggregating. As in this, if we can, I mean, you know, streamline our observation in that pattern, I know everything.
I feel this moment in science was a very important thing where a certain limit in natural science was getting reached and where things never came as they were before. Before there was a certainty of natural laws and how natural laws function and that we are able to capture natural laws. But from this point on, this insecurity came into the question. And I had some very interesting writings of my great-grandfather who was involved in this since he was the director of the Technical University in Berlin at that moment. And their main concern was what will happen to society if people come to know that nothing is certain and that we don't have any answers. And his whole life was dedicated to stop people from knowing that. In such a way that people should never know what it means philosophically, what they have found out. And it was his main concern that society will completely go down the moment people will find out that there is no certainty in natural science. And it's just a way of seeing what you can say clearly.
Well, they thought they were very important.
Yeah. They were very important because they meant that they were capable to do that. They were able to keep students in the university away from this knowledge.
So that's why Einstein, that's why Einstein still wanted to see the order in the uncertainty.
Yeah. Einstein was part of the plan.
Otherwise everything will fall apart.
Yeah.
So is that where actually in your talk, what the title was, where intuition is, that physics follows?
I'm saying it was in search of the secret will and matter, where intuition leads.
Leads.
Yeah, physics follows. So, I mean, actually, maybe the title will become a little more meaningful when we go to the end, because after this part, this is still physics, after this part, I probably shift a little bit metaphysically. I mean, in my limited way,
but if there is an intuition in science that there is something which science doesn't know, that there's a super force, or there is a quantum reduction, or there is something that is more meaningful than something, than what is known so far.
Right.
So that intuition is there.
Right.
And it's quite strong.
That's kind of force from inside, like which urges to find out with utmost sincerity, at least in many cases. I like that. And also one intuition is there, that single observation. Single observer can see, by forgetting observers, all this twin mechanism of pattern is an abstract concept. So having that, that being unpolarized is a property of each photon and not a property of an aggregation. I think that was intuition.
Could you define that term aggregation in that context then?
The aggregation is basically, say, one photon before even it hit the calcite crystal, which will orient according to its nature. One photon is actually already determined to have, the moment it was created or emitted, it is already determined that it is parallel. That is Einstein's view. And another photon is already determined when it was created, emitted, that it is antiparallel. And it is the aggregation of these two predetermined photon, which as a combination creating that kind of phenomenon of conservation of angular momentum. Because if you thought that there was no such thing as polarization, then you cannot explain the phenomenon of polarization where the crystal is actually dividing the beam into two polarized beams, right? So you have to explain that. So that's why there is a polarization nature. I mean, the photons have a nature of being polarized if the right environment is provided, right? So that means there are two ways. One is you explain it like the photon when it is hitting the crystals, it has a 50% chance of going in both directions. And then there is that it is not an aggregation. Each photon, at the moment it is hitting, it is as if coming to know, okay, now let me take this parallel or anything. Whereas the division is already there, right? Like we are seeing the whole light as division of these twins. Twins is like a concept.
Is it inherent or is it resultant? Is it a resultant phenomenon or is it an inherent necessity of matter itself?
Resultant or inherent? Actually, it is both.
Exactly, it is.
Because it is actually a relationship between two realities. It's not like one is real and the other is unreal. Mind and matter. You know, both the observation and the phenomenon, both have to be part of the system. I mean, that's what my...
But this seems to be the nature of the problem. Whether it's polarized or whether it's not polarized in the beginning.
Yes.
Thank you.